My name is Ann Peckham. I'm a volunteer with the Oral History Department at the University of Wisconsin. This is July 12th, 2002, and I'm here with Dr. Maxine Bennett in her home, and we're going to be talking about her life as a faculty member of the University of Wisconsin. She specialized in ear, nose, and throat. Maxine, we're delighted to do this. Could you start out by telling us a little bit about your early childhood and where you live?
All right. I'm an only child, and my parents were 30 and 32 years old when I was born. They had been married 6 years, so it was an unusual beginning. Anyway, it was in Nebraska. I was born in Beaver City, Nebraska, which is the county court house, and my father was in the Treasury Department of the county. We were there only 3 years, and then moved to Cambridge, Nebraska, where I grew up. And Cambridge, Nebraska is a town of approximately 1,200. You know everybody, and everybody knows you. I have just celebrated my 70th high school reunion in Cambridge, Nebraska, their school, and there are still five of us surviving. And of those five, two of us went on to higher education. One of them is a retired farmer, and he's been very successful, and he organized our reunion for us. The other two were two ladies that grew up and lived in the area. One of them was a lawyer, and he has been a successful lawyer in Miami, Florida, Ed Simon, and I, a physician. And we were the only ones, beside one other who is now dead, who went on to higher education. There were 35 in our class, and most of them stayed right there and became housewives or farm wives or what have you. Anyway, it was a great reunion. My grandparents were early settlers, and they came. My grandmother, my mother's mother, my grandmother Klein, was born in Richland County, Wisconsin, one of 12 children, and she was the middle one. My grandfather Klein came from Illinois, and they moved west with everybody else on homesteads. My mother was born in a dugout, which was on their farm. My father was born in a log house, sod roof, in Holbrook, Nebraska. So that there is a connection there with Wisconsin. Let's see, of their education, my mother, being one of three children and living in a dugout, there was little or no opportunity for education. They did have a school for the area, and she got about a third grade, I would imagine. There was no opportunity. My father graduated from high school in Cambridge, Nebraska in 1900. So that was the background of education. But I was always encouraged to continue and pursue my interest and whatever I wanted to do. There was no problem. And they encouraged me. I had no one that I knew who was in the field of medicine. I never knew a woman physician other than when I went to medical school, so that there was no background for my choice of going. After high school, which I graduated in 70 years ago, I chose to go to Hastings College, 100 miles away, a Presbyterian college, and the typical college that one knows about. It was very satisfactory, had a good life there, we had good friends, and I graduated from Hastings College in 1936. I intended to go on to medical school, but I was still a little young for that, so I taught 2 years high school in the Sand Hills of Nebraska, in Ainslie, Nebraska. And I taught, I was assistant principal, and I taught algebra, geometry, biology, general science, women's physical education, and I can't think what else.
But was that all?
That was all, 2 years. And then I decided, my decision to go to medical school, which I entered at the University of Nebraska, which is in Omaha. There I met, there were three of us in the class, Dr. Margaret Prouty, Dr. Ethel Adler, who was a Omaha native, and myself. And there was no problem. We had good friends, and we got along just fine. Let's see.
Could we go back just a minute? Your mother was born in a dugout. Was that because of the tornado country?
Well, no, it was hilly country, you mm-hmm. see, and there was prairie all around. No, little few trees were in their homestead, mm-hmm. and they just would dig a wall into a hillside and then cover it.
Hmm. I see houses that are sort of uh-huh. Frank Lloyd Wright now, type things that are yes, like that's that right, right well, now.
And then they had a well which they could dig and their water supply, and that was it.
My goodness.
Well, let's see. In medical school, I don't know what.
Since there were only three of you
yes.
women in medical school?
Yeah, and Dr. Prouty was from Lincoln. Mm-hmm. Her family, her father had been a Methodist minister, and her mother was a house mother at many of the sororities and fraternities in mm-hmm. Lincoln at the university. So Dr. Prouty was one with whom I became, and we had an apartment, we shared an apartment. And then when we graduated from medical school, she interned in Chicago, and I came here to Madison, Wisconsin in 1942 from medical school. And I came and had an internship at Madison General Hospital. Grace Kraft was superintendent. Ida Collins was the head nursing, and there were about four of us, as I recall, as interns. One was Dr. Jean Nordby in orthopedics here in Madison eventually. But anyway, we were interns. We had to do everything, as you can appreciate, being during the war. We were, when we graduated from medical school, all of our classmates mostly had to go into service. They would not take women physicians, so we were free from that. You could go into be a nurse or something in the women's army, but not as a physician.
Oh, for goodness sake.
So we were excluded that way. At Madison General Hospital, it was a great experience. That's where I became acquainted and under the influence of Dr. Wellwood Nisbet, who, ear, nose, and throat doctor here in Madison. His brother Mark was in I, and they had an office in the old First National Bank building on the sixth floor. And I helped Wellwood a great deal as assistant in surgery, and he encouraged me to come and be his assistant and the preceptorship at his office and St. Mary's and Madison General, which afforded me opportunity for training and in the office. And I was with him for 7 years. And at the end of that time, I was eligible to, and with that, he was clinical head of ear, nose, and throat at the university hospitals. And so I had that opportunity of association at the university on my preceptorship. So then I became eligible to take my American boards, went to New York. How I got there, I don't recall. Must have been trained, I don't know. But anyway, I took my American boards, and that was 1949. And it was 6 weeks before I learned that I had passed them. And it was at that time that Dr. Prouty and I decided to go to Switzerland to climb mountains. But before that, We had been climbing mountains all during medical school at Chile, Colorado camps. And Dr. Prouty, or Joe, she was head mountaineering counselor, and I was assistant and also out camps. So we got involved in mountain climbing in Colorado, and it became one of the things we did all the time on any vacation. We climbed the Matterhorn, in addition to other mountains in Switzerland, the Jungfrau and the Monk and the Eiger, in August 12th and 13th, as I recall the dates, 1949. Arnold Gladhart was a well-known Swiss guide, and he was our guide with another man, because we each had just two on a rope. And we climbed the Matterhorn, and it was a great thing.
How long did that take you?
Well, we left Zermatt in the afternoon around 2 o'clock, and then walked up to the overnight hut, which is where we stayed all night, and then got up at 2 o'clock in the morning to start the climb, because you want to get before the sun hits the glaciers and melting and what have you. We were on top at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
And then it takes a lot more work coming down. And then we came back down to Zermatt. But it was 2 days.
Did you carry packs with everything that you needed?
Oh, yes. And our equipment was quite not like it is in this day and age, but adequate. Crampons, ice axe, protective. And the picture that we have in there is of Dr. Prouty and me on top of the Matterhorn.
My goodness.
And then, let's see. In addition to this, is extracurricular, but we did other climbing, and Dr. Prouty was very avid on this. She and I shared an apartment, and then we built a house out on Wabisa. But she continued after I didn't anymore. But we climbed Rainier. We climbed Mexico, Popocatépetl, Iztaccíhuatl, in Tetons, the Grand Teton, Long's Peak in Estes Park. I think she climbed it, I don't know how many times, but she climbed the east face. I didn't go into that too much. But anyway, that was extracurricular. After I got my boards, and Wellwood Nesbitt was very kind about this, and Dr. Tenney, who was the pediatrician, the father of Hod, he was a good friend, and he encouraged me to go to the Bureau of Public Education, and I was there for 3 years as a medical director in the Bureau for Handicapped Children at the state. And that was fun. We had hearing clinics all over the state and did all kinds of things with Delavan and Janesville, the two schools for the blind and the deaf. And then that I was offered the opportunity to go to the university as full-time faculty. Dr. Middleton was dean, and he was extremely kind, and he offered me the position of associate professor. There were no full-time people in ear, nose, and throat. The eye department was pretty limited also. Dr. Dewar, Dr. Davis, all of those. But I went. It was a great experience. We had good relationships with students and the Department of Surgery, in which ear, nose, and throat is. We continued that, and eventually I got the program approved for residency training. And I was appointed chairman and of ear, nose, and throat at the university hospitals. We got our first residents, and our first residents, two of them, one was a German and one was a Korean boy. And they were two of our first residents, and they continued to keep in contact. Mm-hmm. And the Korean boy is very close, and he considers me his American mother.
Oh, that's nice. When did all this happen?
Well, I went to the university full-time in, let's see, 1953. And I did a lot of the teaching of the medical students. And I got that Junior Teaching Award of Bedpan Award.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it was, I have it in there, it says Matterhorn Bennett or something like that. Anyway, I had a good relationship with students, and of the many students, one down in Marco Island, Dr. Folsom. Every time we go there, he's a Wisconsin graduate, Wisconsin born here. He's in Marco, and whenever we go, he always says to me, or to other people in the waiting room, she was my teacher.
That's nice.
Anyway, that continued. We had wonderful relationships. I got good residents. I never had a woman doctor apply for a residency the whole time I was at the medical school. There just weren't women interested, and there weren't that many women physicians. So I never had the opportunity of training a woman resident. Oh, but nice. I trained many of them, and one of them was Dr. Jim Brandenburg. Now, Dr. Brandenburg, a Madison native, and he went into the service, and then he was getting ready, and I got him to come back as an assistant professor in the ear, nose, and throat division of the Department of Surgery, and he became full-time, and it was a great asset. And when I decided to retire, he became chairman and continued so, and has been very successful.
And what year was that?
Well, I retired in 1978. The reason I retired, we were going to move into that new hospital complex, and I could not go for that. And I was able at that time to retire, which I did. And I was very pleased, and knowing that Jim was there to take over, it was one of the great times. Now, there's something here about...
Yes, let's go back a little bit.
Okay.
To when you came to the university. Well, there weren't very many places in the country to train ear, nose, and throat doctors,
no,
were there?
No. Most of them would have been in New York, Chicago, Michigan had a good department, Minnesota had a good department. Those are ones that I knew, but they weren't large departments. And I had a maximum of 4 residents before I retired.
4 at one time?
Well, there were 4 in different years.
In 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And how big a staff was there?
Well, our staff consisted primarily, before we got Jim Brandenburg, of clinical people. They all volunteered their services. Rollo Lang, who was with Dr. Taborsky,
mm-hmm,
and Dr. Nesbitt. Mm-hmm. Dr. Taborsky, who was Wellwood's son-in-law, married Nancy Taborsky, or Nancy Nesbitt. Yeah, and so... He took over Dr. Nesbitt's practice after he died, and then they were all clinical professors. They came and assisted in surgery and taught our residents. We had one from Marshfield, Bright Larkin, and he came down and just was wonderful with our residents in anatomy and everything. They all volunteered their time. There was no, they didn't have opportunity for that. There were no private patients. Early, when I came, I just was on a salary, as I recall, it was $6,000. And then when the Department of Surgery decided that they would have surgical associates, so private patients were admitted, and we as professors or doctors could have private patients, and it was all through surgical associates who managed everything. And so that was the way. But like Rollo Lang, they were all clinic. They never got any money. They didn't have that privilege. But
it was a very nice arrangement.
Yes, it was. And Dr. Schmidt was chairman of surgery. Dr. Carreri, Tony Carreri later. They were wonderful people. And I was the only woman in the Department of Surgery because OB and gynecology were separate. And so I was the only woman, and in surgery, you know, they have this dressing room where they all get together and talk and what have you. Well, I wasn't allowed there, so I worked with the nurses, and it worked just beautifully. They were wonderful ladies.
Do the women have their own dressing room now?
Gee, I don't know.
I think they
do. They must have.
They must.
Oh, sure,
there
they
are
would.
So many of them.
There are so many of them, yes. And one of the honors and things that I accomplished, for which I'm very proud, well, I got my boards. That was necessary. But the Triological Society is a special group, and it's triological, which is American Otological Society, American Rhinological Society, and American Laryngological Society, the Triology. It is by invitation and qualifications and all of that. I have good friends in Milwaukee, Meyer Fox, and a few others who were members of the Triological. And they put my name in, they nominated me, that was while I was still at full time, to become a member. So I had to present a paper at the middle section meeting, which was at Rochester. And I presented a paper on blastomycosis of the larynx. Well, it was received, and they were all very nice. Then it was approved for my candidacy. So for the candidacy, I was requested to write a thesis, and then it would be judged. I wrote a thesis, which was a research project on unilateral cranial nerve paralysis with secondary to sphenoid sinus cancer. And it was a long dissertation. I did a lot of work for it. It was approved and accepted. And in 1967, I was taken in as a member of the Triological Society. I think, as I recall and everybody else recalls, I think I was the first woman member of the Triological Society. And that was a great privilege and a great opportunity because you met otolaryngologists from all over. And it was about 600, as I recall, membership. So it was restricted.
Small.
And then I was chairman of the middle section of the Triological, which they have the four sections, and they meet in different parts of the location. And I was chairman of that one here in Madison, which was a great opportunity. But that was one of the good successes. Now,
shall we pause for a moment?
Yes, sure. Well, as far as location, when I first came, my office, quotes, was on the fourth floor of the hospital in the area, oh golly, it was one floor below the surgery department, and I shared an office. I think it was Betty Bamforth, but I'm not sure when she did come. But then our clinic was on the first floor of the hospital in the walkway, the hallway, between the medical school and the hospital. And the eye department was on the left side and the ear, nose, and throat on the right. We shared a nurse who took care of, we had clinics on Tuesdays and Thursdays, as I recall. All the patients were, most of them, from Martha.
Right.
Yeah.
This was at your office at Wisconsin General Hospital?
That's right. And we had patients on 5 East, and we had a clinic up there for the patients who were admitted or had to be checked out. But it was very limited. Ruth Parkinson was our nurse for both eye and ear, nose, and throat clinics. All patients were clinic patients. We kept busy. Medical students were assigned to us for teaching and training, which they did beautifully. And then we were moved. I think it was Dr. Middleton who made the arrangements. We were transferred over to Bradley Hospital. Now, you had to go through X-ray to get to Bradley, but we had beautiful quarters established for us at Bradley. I had a private office. We had wonderful nurses, a large reception room, good examining rooms, a conference room where we had conferences every Saturday morning. So it was a great improvement, and that was continued. When they were going to move to the new hospital, I decided, no thanks. I didn't want to contend with that. So I retired in 1978, and Dr. Brandenburg took over as chairman. It was a well-known program, good residencies, good training, and we had a wonderful residence those 10 years that I was chairman.
Now, in Bradley, that was pediatrics.
That's right.
The pediatrics bed patients.
That's right. And that was transferred. I mean, they left that. I don't know where they put them. But we had our patients were on 5 East, together mm-hmm. with eye patients.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as far as the other women on the hospital faculty, there were very few of us. Helen Dickey, in internal medicine. Dr. Thornton in OB gynecology. I can't.
Dr. Mendenhall?
No, she wasn't full time at the. No, she was at the Veterans Hospital and Student Health. Sally.
Mm-hmm.
No. And Dr. Bamforth, Betty Bamforth, was in anesthesia and very active. But I think that was about all of the women on the faculty. And there was never another woman in the Department of Surgery.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. What do you consider your single most important contribution?
I guess getting the ear, nose, and throat otolaryngology approved and residency and training mm-hmm. and development.
Mm-hmm.
And through the great help with the clinical people, Kim Scott, Rollo Lang, all of them who contributed so much in the teaching and training.
Mm-hmm. That's very nice. Did you serve on any campus committees? Faculty Senate or any of those things?
Oh, I can't recall any specific thing. In the community, Dr. Prouty and I both became members of the Altrusa Club, which we got to know many of mm-hmm. the ladies in the community, which has changed considerably. And then, let's see.
Well, the department was fairly small, so there probably weren't too many departmental committees.
No, there weren't. And in the Department of Surgery, there weren't any specific committees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how about deans?
Deans? Well, Dr. Middleton was the only dean that I knew. And he was great.
Well, you knew John Bowers.
Oh, yes.
Everybody's interested in hearing about
I was
John
on
Bowers.
The committee in the Department of Surgery when we went over to see Elvim and we fired John Bowers. Yeah. They were the ones.
On what basis was this?
Gosh, I can't remember. I don't know what he was condemned for. I don't know. I don't recall. But I know I recall going to Dr. Elvim's office, the president, and representing one of the people in the Department of Surgery, agreeing that Bowers should leave.
Mm-hmm. How about the honors and awards? You talked about that a little bit. Got the bedpan,
yes.
It was a great honor to be the president of the Trilogical Society.
It was the bedpan award was a junior award for teaching, and I gave regular lectures to the medical students on ear, nose, and throat, and then they participated actively in the clinics with direction and experience.
Let's talk a little bit about after you retired. Did you keep on climbing mountains?
Yes. Oh, yes. But not as much because, after all, Dr. Prouty and I built a house out on Lake Wabisa, and it's opposite McFarland. We had a large lakeshore and also Indian effigy mounds. And so we arranged with John Steinman, an architect from New Glarus area, and he designed our house, which was unbelievable. It was designed so it did not interfere with any of the Indian mounds. the effigy mounds, and get my legs crossed out of here. House was designed so that it faced the lake, and the windows on the lakeside were 12 feet high. The overhang was such that it protected from the sun in the summer, and in the winter afforded light to come in.
Oh,
we had 9 outside doors. There was no plaster in the house. It was an unbelievable house, and that I sold after Dr. Prouty had to, she left and went into Oakwood. And I sold the house in 1990. But in that interval, there were lots of things that changed and activities.
The things that you wanted to do at the time of retirement?
Yeah, well, during my tenure at the university hospitals, Dr. Fred, who was president, was one of my patients. And Dr. Fred was a good friend, and Elizabeth McCoy, another good friend, Altrusa and bacteriology. And Dr. Fred, one occasion, said, now there's going to be a new dean of women to replace Dean Troxell. She's coming from the University of Kansas, and I think you should get to know her because Kansas and Nebraska. So he encouraged that, and so Martha Peterson came as Dean of Women, and that was
1956.
That's right. And as Dean of Women, with that, and then Dr. Schaefer, who was at the Jackson Clinic, she was also from Kansas. So here were three, and then Dr. Prouty, the four of us. We kind of formed a relationship, and with Martha, when we spent a lot of time, we did a lot of canoeing. And this was vacation time. And so we did a lot of that and had great times. And then when Martha went to Barnard as president of Barnard, I had a sabbatical and a semester leave at Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. Dr. Baker was chairman there. So I got acquainted with New York and then with Martha's connections on her board memberships of Exxon, MetLife, and what have you. She told them at the Exxon directors that it was awfully hard when they came with their wives, that she was, you know, didn't like to intrude and all of that. And they said, well, bring somebody with you. So I was privileged and able to go with her on so many of the Exxon trips. We went to Japan, and she was to christen an Exxon tanker in Japan, and they were just wonderful. And we had two Japanese men who escorted us and met us and took us every place, and we were very friendly. And at the end, they said when we heard that Miss Peterson was coming, we knew that she must be very old and very rich. But then when she said she was bringing her doctor, we decided that she must not be very well. So we went to Japan with all of these. We went to England so many times and had such great experiences with that. Now, I did Mexico climbing after I retired, I think. Maybe not. But anyway, that I didn't have that much interest in it. Dr. Prouty continued in her traveling all over the world. And she was in pediatrics at the Jackson Clinic. Then, upon retirement, Martha and I had, in the meantime, experienced lots of good trips to Door County and acquired, through good friends, Charles Bunn, and Harriet, he was in law school and all of this, and well-known in Madison. They knew that we liked Door County, and they had a piece of property on Lake Michigan that they were not going to develop. And they offered Martha and me the opportunity to camp there, which we did, and then eventually to buy the property, which we did. And it was absolutely wonderful. When we bought the property, it was 200 feet on the Lake Michigan, 2 miles north of Jacksonport. Mm-hmm. We built a house, which was wonderful. We used as a summer vacation spot, And then upon retirement, we decided that we should go into an antique business because of our background and all the antiques that we owned. And so we were able to get a log cabin in Jacksonport and opened the Port Antique Shop, which I was able to spend time there because I had retired. Martha was still active in her deaning and presidencies. And so we had this shop, and we had wonderful time developing it, getting to know people, and many of these things, you see, were in our antique shop. And we go to auctions, and at that time, you could afford to buy something in an auction. And we did, and we bought these things and had one. We had quilts coming out of our ears from family inheritance and everything. Well, that we continued for 8 years, but it was great. And we just opened it very short hours. Had a wonderful time.
That's a lot of work.
Oh, yes, but it was great.
Yeah.
And that's what one of the things that I did. Now, let's see what else. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after we sold the property up in Door County, and then had the property here, and many of the meetings of the Trilogical or the Academy of Otolaryngology were held in Florida, in on the west coast, the east of the ocean side, and there, Martha was retiring from MetLife, Macy's board, and so there was a nice sizable thing, and she said, why don't we look at a condo down in Florida for retirement? So we looked, and we got acquainted with somebody over, and we went. I had a meeting in Marco, so that we liked it better than over in the Miami side. So we went to Marco, and had a wonderful relationship with this real estate man, and found this condo on Lake the Gulf, which is the Summit House on the 12th floor. We look out and we have a beautiful view of the Gulf. Sunset, it gets the sunset views, and we spend time now down there. And I sold the house on Wabisa. We got this apartment here on Enterprise Lane, and we spend 6 months in Florida, 6 months here.
That's wonderful. Sounds like a pretty good life.
I've been very, very fortunate. Very fortunate.
Have you any regrets?
Never, never.
Never.
We have so many friends. The problem is now we're all getting so old that most of them are gone, and we don't have that contact, but we have memories.
Mm-hmm. Could we go back to your very beginning, that you were an only child with what at the time were probably older parents, though.
That's
in
right.
This day and age, they wouldn't
That's
be
right.
older at all.
That's
They'd
right.
be young.
That's right. That's right. Well, it was. And again, my mother, she was learned to be a seamstress. She always did sewing for people in the community. And she didn't have the education, but she was self-taught, and she was very, extremely capable, very active in the Congregational Church, and Rebecca Lodge, and all of that. So I had many contacts, and my father, he was a very capable man, and he was head of the Cooperative Oil Company for 25 years in Cambridge. So that was that connection there. And I can remember in high school, the farmers all came to town on Saturday. So I built a little pop stand on the grounds of the Cambridge Cooperative Oil Company and had this pop stand. And then on Saturdays, my mother would mix up the ice cream, but I had to freeze it. And so then we would take it down, and we had homemade ice cream cones on Saturdays. I ended up by making $100 profit on my pop stand, and that's what I used when I went to Hastings College.
So you don't think being an only child was a handicap?
Oh, never, never. Mm-hmm. And had so many friends in neighborhood and activities. I played baseball and everything else. We didn't have women's athletics in any way, and so, but I had many opportunities, and I was very active, and mm-hmm. probably a tomboy.
Well, that's all right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, it's an awful lot of history. I don't think there was anything else that Yes, I know something else. As a result of my retirement up in Door County, I went to the Peninsula Arts School. It was a great school, and it still is. And I decided, well, I hadn't done anything in art or in drawing or anything like that. So I took a class first in drawing, and then in watercolor from Jim Range, who was one of the instructors. It was absolutely marvelous. And so then from there, I started into pastel class. And I became very interested and loved pastels, gave up the other, and have since been a pastel artist for Florida sunsets over the Gulf. And I can show you many of those
pastels of them
that are here as well as in Marco. Mm-hmm. So again, this summer we're going up to Door County for a week, and I'm going to take another pastel course from Bonnie.
Wonderful.
And it's been great. And that was just extracurricular. I don't know of anything else. Oh, I've been active on the Art League board down in Marco. They have a very active art society, and that's been fun. And, you know, the usual things.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're more than
welcome.
I hope that it isn't too long and drawn out.
No, it's just perfect.